Welcome to Toddler Toolkit.
Hi, toddler parents. I am so excited. We have a special guest today, Dee Uphouse. She is a wife, mom of four little girls. She is a children's sleep coach and a motherhood coach. She's passionate about helping moms redefine their motherhood experience by starting with their children's sleep. She's realized after the birth of her second child that we don't need to sacrifice every aspect of ourselves just to become a mom. She also recognizes that we change and we are different moms after the birth of each child. But we can still have the motherhood journey we want to have. Oh, I love that. Dee works primarily with toddlers and moms who have multiple children. Well, welcome, Dee. So glad to have you here.
Thank you so much for having me today.
All right. So, Dee, can you share with us a little bit about your motherhood journey and how you changed after the birth of your four girls?
Yeah, absolutely. So my oldest is 8. And when she was born, we actually owned a restaurant. And so I knew from the time I was pregnant that I needed to make sure that sleep was a priority in our house because we were working long hours. My husband was working long hours. So I kind of, you know, fell into this naturally a little bit, but she just happened to be a really good sleeper. So I had a really easy postpartum experience with her, which in today's age is kind of not normal. And I was like, something has to be wrong. I was like, there has to be something wrong. I'm like, she nursed well, she slept well. And I had an emergency C-section because she completely crashed. But after 2 weeks of being home, I was like, I got to get out of this house. I was like, I just need to keep going. And she was just such an easy baby that I was like, oh, okay, like this is great. And so when she was about 18 months old, I got pregnant with her second. And so in that whole pregnancy, me and my husband had talked a lot. Number one, it was a really hard pregnancy compared to my first. My first was so, like, everything was easy about my first child. And so we still owned the restaurant and we realized that we didn't want to keep living this life with multiple kids. Because it's long hours, it's late nights. You know, my husband didn't realize how much he missed being at the restaurant 5, 6, 7 days a week sometimes with our first until he was home with our second in a different job. But after the birth of my second child, everything changed. I became a different mom because I was trying to split my time between two kids, number one. Number two, I had a terrible pregnancy. I had a terrible postpartum experience. She wouldn't latch. She wouldn't eat. She had trouble gaining weight. It was just, she wouldn't sleep except on me. I slept on the couch for 4.5 months, like unsafe, like not good for my mental health. I didn't realize how bad it was until I was actually out of it. And so she is the one that kind of like altered my view on how we change each time postpartum. And in a good way and a bad way, but also how we become different parents. Like I was parenting her different from day one than I was parenting my oldest. And then I got pregnant with our third. So my oldest two are 26 months apart. My second and my third are 22 months apart. So they got closer. We were also moving cross country. So I realized I couldn't go through that whole thing again, being 1800 miles away from family and away from our support system. So I totally dove into the world of I need to put as much knowledge in my brain as possible and know what I need to do so that I don't have to relive this again. I was like, I'm going to have two kids. I don't have my mother-in-law to send them off to anymore. Like I need to make sure that this newborn phase is easier on me because I don't have any help. So she was born in the end of 2019 and then she was a rock star. She slept. She never nursed, but I exclusively pumped for her, which is like a whole nother thing. But she slept, and that was the most important. Like I made a conscious decision. I was going to bed every single night, like into my bed. And then when she was 9 months old, found out I was pregnant with her fourth. So, you know, again, like my third and fourth are 18 months apart. And I was like, okay, I've had three drastically different experiences. My first was really easy. My second was really hard. My third was easy because I had consumed so much knowledge from like resources and coaches, but I also had my personal knowledge. So with my fourth, I was like, well, it's the fourth. You have no choice but to be easy. I was like, it has to be. We still live far away from family. I'm like, you know, I have four kids, 5 and under. And so I realized, though, along the way that my passion was also with helping other moms. And when I was in that newborn stage and, you know, becoming a different mom each time and my parenting style changed and just like how to manage multiple kids at once, I realized that my passion lied with helping other moms. So I started with sleep because sleep is the foundation. When we are well rested and when our kids are well rested, we can be the best moms that we want to be, but our kids also aren't that cranky and overtired and, you know, total terrors. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, you can still have well-rested kids who go through tantrums and that happens because that's normal in toddlerhood. But you can at least have a foundation being like, I know that you need more sleep right now. So how can we adjust it and how can we fix it? And so that's where it kind of started. And then with helping so many families with sleep, I realized along the way, like, we as moms always put ourselves last. I think I kind of knew that. But in general, like, we as moms always put ourselves last. So I think it's really important to make sure we take care of ourselves. And it kind of stinks because we have to take care of ourselves and we have to take care of kids. But if we can make that realization and if we can connect those dots for ourselves, I think it's really important so that we can have that motherhood journey we want. Because we all have this vision of what we picture motherhood. And it's never going to be exact, but you can try to like walk along the same path with detours along the way.
Wow, you just shared so much. So you guys owned a restaurant. Now, did you also have to sell the restaurant before you moved, or were you in the process of selling it? And how did travel go with all the kids?
Yeah, so as far as the restaurant goes, when I was pregnant with our second, we realized we didn't want that life anymore. So our last service, we sold the restaurant, but our last service was actually exactly a week before my second was born.
Wow.
So I was doing everything I could not to go into labor. Like making sure that I didn't go into labor early. I'm like, I got to make it to this date. And then after that, I was like, I want to go into labor. I ended up having 4 C-sections, so it's okay. But yeah, so we sold the restaurant. And then 10 days after my second was born, my husband started his new job. So it was a lot. And then he was traveling basically for like 5 weeks.
And how did you have to travel with the kids by yourself too? Because he was doing all those other things. Were you able to travel together?
No. So I stayed home with our 2-year-old and newborn at the time. And my mother-in-law like helped drastically. Like she would take my older kiddo like all the time and like overnight. So I think for the first like 2.5 years of her life, she basically spent like 2 to 3 nights at my in-law's house, which was super helpful when I had the baby, especially because my second rocked my world and never slept. So she would be like, hey, I know your husband's traveling. Like, let me just take her for a couple nights to take the pressure off of you. So that was really helpful. As far as the move, my husband did move before us. So he moved about 3 months before us. Wow. So I moved in with my in-laws. So that was really helpful. And then I traveled from New Jersey to Colorado with my mother-in-law because I was terrified of flying with 2 kids by myself.
Yeah.
Which is so funny because, not funny, but I look back now and I look back at how nervous I was. But now I travel with all 4 kids solo, like on a plane or road tripping all the time because my husband can't take as much time off as we like to travel for when we go back to New Jersey for the summer and stuff. So like I fly solo all the time with the kids and like it's like no big deal at this point.
What was your youngest child's age when you started having that confidence to travel or go on a plane with them?
So it was after the first flight. So my oldest was 2.5.
Okay. So a toddler. Yeah.
Was still a toddler. Sorry. She was 3.5 when we moved here. So my oldest was 3.5 and my second was like 16 months. And then by the time she was 18 months is when I took the first flight with the 2 of them solo. And then that Christmas, so I had 3 kids that Christmas, a newborn, an almost 2-year-old, and a newly turned 4-year-old. And I had traveled solo with them at Christmas. It was kind of like, it's one of those things that I just didn't have a choice, right? And I am a person that I was like, well, I really want to do this. So I'm going to do this. And I think that's like, so many parents have such a fear about traveling. I can tell you, I have my kids have been on like 25 flights back and forth between Colorado and New Jersey over the last 5 years. I can tell you, I've never seen the same person twice. So like, it's totally fine. And I think, and I've only had 1 nasty comment said to me on a plane. And I think it's just one of those things that like, it's worth traveling with your kids. and they get better and it gets easier because you just get more confidence. And you also just get to be like, hey, it's a 4.5 hour flight. Like, there's a lot of adults who are really terrible travelers and who are not nice to like the airlines in general. So my kids being well-behaved on the plane beats your adult who is, you know, freaking out because there's turbulence or because they don't have the right soda or because they don't have the right bento box for them, like snack box, whatever it is. So in general, like my feeling on traveling is it's always worth the trip.
I love that. And it sounds like what you're saying is it's a little bit of mind over matter. And if you don't try things, if you don't do things, you're never going to grow, you're never going to learn, and you're never going to really build that confidence. Do you think that aspect that you learned from traveling carries over to other parts of motherhood or, you know, having multiple kids or becoming a more confident parent? Do you think that that kind of principle carries over a little bit into parenting?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I say this all the time about sleep training. So obviously I'm a children's sleep coach and I say this all about time about sleep training. Like, we don't need to be a slave to our kids' sleep, but they need to be solid sleepers so that we can then go do fun things. So once you sleep train and your kids are sleeping well, it's really easy to then skip the nap. Or it's really easy to be like, hey, let's go away for a hotel room in a night. And like, they're going to not get as great sleep and that's okay. But then when we get back, I know that I can get them back on track. But when you are someone who is constantly questioning whether or not like the sleep is enough, which is the foundation of life, like everybody needs sleep. And like when you get good quality sleep, you're a different person in the morning than when you sleep poorly. And I think that it really totally translates because you need to live life. Just because you have a kid doesn't mean life needs to stop and doesn't mean that you can't do things. And I think that a lot of first-time parents feel that where they're like, oh, well, I have a kid now, so I have to totally work around their nap schedule and, you know, we can't enjoy it, go to a party anymore, and we can't do this. Where, yes, when like they're little, like when they're really little, it's really easy because they just sleep anywhere. But in general, like, yeah, maybe it's hard for the day, but that experience is worth it. Like going to a family party is really worth it. Going to the neighborhood party is totally worth it. Going to the pool for the day, totally worth it. Going on vacation. And I think that the sooner you realize that, that you're actually raising a tiny human, not like your kid isn't going to be a kid forever. So the sooner that you get to do all these experiences, as they get older, it makes it really easy to be like, hey, let's go. Like, let's hop in the car and let's go do something. As opposed to feeling like you're trapped to your house.
Yeah, that is such a big thing. And we're talking about this and we have a trip planned in the next few weeks. The boys are still in cribs and I just have the feeling a toddler bed, even though it would be easier to do for the trip, just was not going to work because they're twins. And so we ended up getting a hotel that allowed two cribs in a room. And we are visiting the in-laws and the kid's great-grandpa. So it's a very special trip. And we were looking at our schedule. And on that one day that we're going to be there the whole day, we were, you know, me and my husband were talking. We're like, yeah, there's not going to be time for a nap. And if they do get a nap, it's just going to have to be like a quick car nap because we have like Easter egg hunt in the morning at the in-laws. Then we got to go visit grandpa. And then we got to do all this other stuff. And there's like a nap is not going to fit in that day. And we kind of, at first we were like, oh man, because if they don't nap, but then we thought, you know what? They're going to be so stimulated. It's going to be so much fun. They're probably not going to be thinking about the nap. And exactly. They'll just make the sleep up later that night, hopefully. So.
Right. And I mean, I think that's like, you know, where it all comes from. Like being able to travel and do things is what's really important. And, you know, it's living in the now. And it's something that I see a lot of parents sometimes say. It's like, okay, well, you know, if like their kid sleeps with them, oh, well, they're not going to sleep in your bed forever. And my argument to that is, you're right. They're not going to sleep in your bed forever. But I know plenty of 9, 10, and 11-year-olds who still want to sleep with their parents and do sleep with their parents because they're so difficult. But it's not just about the future. It's also about the now. And what you're feeling in the now and how you're living in the now, that is important. So yeah, so one day that they don't get to nap and like maybe they just don't sleep well in general in the hotel room in a different crib. And that's okay. But you know, when you get back home, that they have that normalcy and that set schedule that is going to make the transition back in a lot easier, as opposed to someone who doesn't have that consistency or that routine or schedule. And then that's when they're like, oh, but they're going to totally throw off because, you know, we typically get two or three good nights a week. And what if those were going to be their two or three good nights a week?
So, oh, wow. Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because they'll go home and they're really good sleepers for the most part. You know, they're in that phase where sometimes one doesn't nap and the other one does, but they still can do their downtime and it all works out. And yeah, that is interesting. So yeah, families that have to deal with their kids not really ever getting consistent good sleep, that can really be feel more detrimental than where for us, it's like, yeah, it will be tough maybe in the short term if they get a little cranky. However, maybe they won't, and we'll have a great time. And the benefit of it outweighs, you know, the crankiness. You know, grandpa's 95, like this might be the last time they get to see him. It's worth it. Right. Like we got to do this. So, and then they can get back on routine, you know?
Right. Of course. And you know, it's funny. So like I just had a client sign on who has a 2.5-year-old. And I have this really long intake form. And I always ask what they're like, do they have any like reoccurring events or classes or anything? And she literally had to write, no, not until we're sleeping better, because it's so unpredictable in her house.
Oh, wow.
So she wants to sign up her daughter for some things, but she can't because it's just sleep is so unpredictable in her house that she can't even say, hey, every Wednesday at 10 a.m., we have a class. Because sometimes that's her downtime because she slept so poorly the night before. And like, that is like my mission so that you can actually be like, yeah, you want to go do the class? Let's go do this. Let's go to the library. Let's do this and not have to worry day to day. What is their day going to look like or their schedule or their sleep going to look like?
Absolutely. That's important. I mean, you think about it. Some of the library classes are only like 30 minutes and you got to get your toddler's got to get dressed, their shoes on, get into the car seat, get to the place, get out, attend the class. And if they are not sleeping, they're more likely to have tantrums, more likely to struggle with their emotions to even get there. So I can definitely see how that could be so tough and to challenge, and where really focusing on the root cause, it sounds like the root cause of what is happening and not just like trying to band-aid. Like certain things might work, but in this situation, sleep is the thing that really needs to be fixed. It's not necessarily the toddler's tantrums in this scenario, it's the sleep comes first. Tantrums and big feelings and navigating that kind of comes later because, you know, the child is needing that. And it's going to be hard to let alone go to a toddler class where they're going to be available to play and learn when they are just not regulated.
Yeah, of course. And I mean, that's something even with my now 6-year-old, who is my second child, who has been tough, like, from day one. She's been a middle kid since the day she was born. But even with her, like now, and like we've been doing this for years because of who she is, but I'm like, does she need extra sleep? Does she need something to eat? And does she just need to snuggle with me and cuddle for a little bit? Like those are like the three things every single day. If she's having really big feelings, like what one of those three things needs to be fixed to the point where she even knows that I'm like, okay, are you hungry? She's like, actually, I am. Because like she just doesn't think about it that way. And I'm like, you need extra sleep. And I'm like, what can I do to help her get a little bit of extra sleep right now? She's a very active girl. She's in kindergarten. She's on gymnastics team. So she practices for 4 hours a week, which is a lot. And I understand that. And like, where can I make up that extra sleep for her? So I'm like, hey, you want to know what? It's 3 o'clock. I know that you're 6, but I have to run and go do an errand. Like, let's go because I know you'll get a 30-minute car ride nap. And like just knowing how to navigate all that in toddlerhood, I think is really important. Those are like typically the three, like the first three things I always looked at in my toddlers was sleep, food, and do you just need like an extra hug right now and some extra one-on-one time? And then trying to navigate all those big emotions and feelings from there.
It's amazing. It's very basic things. And I think sometimes as parents, we might think like there's more to it or it's like personal. Our toddler's kind of mad at us. It's a personal thing. They're like, go away, or I don't want you. But it's really some basic needs, and that can really, really catapult the behavior or the tantrums. And I love how you said that because, you know, I have twin boys and they're always in a better mood after eating. It's just one of those things. If they're tired, food helps. Food always helps. But of course, getting a good nap, getting good sleep is very important as well. And as those basic things, those basic attention, affection, And that's kind of an interesting thing too, because you have four girls, and just with me having twin boys, you know, they both want attention at the same time. I'm sure, have you navigated some of that with your girls, like getting all that attention, filling all those buckets? Do you have any insights for us or experiences?
Yeah. I mean, as soon as you have your second kid, you already feel split, you know, and it's so true. Like, your time is split, but your love does grow. And so you just figure out, like, every child is so individual, right? And their needs are so individual. So, you know, me and my husband talk about this a lot, is like, our second daughter, like, she needs a little bit of extra attention a lot of times. And our third, like, usually prefers my husband. My fourth usually prefers me. And we just make sure that we try to find time to, like, not necessarily like big one-on-one outings or anything, but it's like, hey, how about we play a game right now? And like, really just try to like focus on something that kid wants to do and likes to do, but it still doesn't make it easy. It's still hard. And like, my time is still divided. So like, you know, if my bigs ever have off on a day that my littles have school, because my two littles are still in preschool, but if they ever have off, like, I make sure that we drop them off at school, and that with my two bigs, we go and do something. Like, we go to the coffee shop and they get to get hot chocolate and a cookie or whatever it is, or like, we go to Target, or like something that seems so little to us, but is so big to them. And I think sometimes we think that we need to do these big extravagant things to spend one-on-one time with our kids, when like, in reality, like a couple, like, we started this a while ago, like, our littles would go down and we would play a game that is more advanced with our bigs. And like, that changes like the connection, and they just want to feel that connection. And that's what each kid wants. And, you know, like, how can you make it up? But I have also made it a point to make sure all of my kids know, like, you have to wait for this. So like, if my 6-year-old needs something and my 2-year-old needs something, I don't always just go to my 2-year-old. I make my 2-year-old wait too, because I think that's not fair. And like, that's something that I've always, I don't know who told me this or where I read it, but like, when you have your second kid, you can't always have your toddler waiting. So you say, if the baby's crying and your toddler needs something, you say to the baby, you just have to wait one moment. I have to get juice for my, you know, your other kid. And I think it's really important. And also, I think this, the time when you become a second time mom, and I think even a twin mom, because I have a niece and nephew who are twins. And, you know, so we learned a lot about twins when that happened. But I think even then, like, everybody has to wait. And I think you get more comfortable with like, letting them fuss for a few minutes when you have a second kid, because you realize how big tantrums can be in toddlerhood, that a baby crying is actually the least of your worries. The toddler tantrum is 10 times worse, which is why I like helping moms of multiples, because I'm a mom of multiple. Of multiple kids. And I think it's really important to know that, like, how to manage that and how to make that all work together while still maintaining a little bit of a sense of self.
I love all of that. I have a question that I'm so curious about. I'm thinking about bedtime routine for your family. What does that look like, and how do you manage that?
So right now, I will give you some examples because it's evolved. Right now, we divide and conquer. So my husband is home for bedtime. So right now, we divide and conquer. The two bigs share a room. So we switch every other night. And then the two littles each have their own room. So the two littles get one parent and the two bigs get one parent. And then every other night, we switch. It also helps with default parenting, because I am 100%, you know, it's funny. So my fourth child prefers me and my third child prefers my husband, but they go to bed together and do bedtime routine together.
Oh, okay.
And so every other night they're like, no, I want mom. No, I want dad, because we alternate. So it just helps with the default parenting and you not having to be the one that puts your child to bed every single night. So that's one. And then number two, for a while, when all of our kids go to bed at the same time. So I have a 2-year-old, a 4-year-old, a 6-year-old, an 8-year-old. And we have to be up early in the morning and we have to leave early in the morning. And everybody needs a different amount of sleep. So my littles sleep in later than my bigs, but we all need to be up. So they all go to bed at the same time for the most part. And when they were all on the same level, because actually right now we have two kids in the basement and two kids upstairs. When they were all on the same level, it was still every other night. So all four kids in the bathroom, brushing their teeth at the same time, getting their PJs on, and it was one parent every other night. And that's just, you know, how it evolved, because we just couldn't keep doing it. And then one parent is downstairs cleaning up a little bit, starting to prep, like get dinner ready for us, because we eat after our kids go to bed, because my husband, even though he's there for bedtime, he actually works a little bit late. So like, my kids can't wait to eat until 6:30, 7 o'clock. So it's just a process, but the quicker you can get your kids on a bedtime routine in general, even as a baby, the quicker you can just get everybody on the same routine. And so when we had babies, obviously it was a little bit different. And usually we would put the older kids to bed first and then the baby. But the baby would be in the room with us, you know, hanging out, like listening to the story, like watching their siblings brush teeth, like, you know. And I think having a solid bedtime routine is really where it becomes key to not have your bedtime so divided.
Hi, toddler parents. Is it cold and snowy where you are, or do you see the first signs of spring? I decided we are taking Tour Day Park this spring. We've already been to 6 park playgrounds so far, 2 family stables and 4 new ones. I take my twin toddlers out by myself for 2 to 3 hours at a time. I do not worry about tantrums because I have the public tantrum game plan. So even when things are going or getting tough, I know how to avoid it or get through it quickly, e.g., toddler swapping or toddlers not listening. I wanted to share my method with you live. So go to the show notes and sign up for the Public Tantrum Game Plan Workshop. You'll discover the 3 most important steps to less public tantrums. Get my Public Tantrum Game Plan, Fast Action Toddler Listening Methods for When You're Out in Public, the Toddler Disappointment Formula to Reverse I Wanted That, I Don't Want to Wait, or I Didn't Get My Way Tantrums. Plus, get my bonus of Happy Winter Toddler Routine and Fun Creative Indoor Play Ideas, because it is still cold outside and snowy for some of us. So if you are listening to this right now, there is a workshop today when this episode is released on March 20th. So if you can make it, I know this is last minute, but I am hosting the workshop on Wednesday, March 20th at 8 p.m. EST. I know a lot of you guys might be working moms. Not everybody is at home. So I am hosting this workshop as late as I ever have, 8 p.m. EST on March 20th. If you cannot make that time, I am offering an earlier time on Wednesday, March 27th at 12:30 p.m. EST as well, to help working moms so you can listen on your lunch break. So hopefully these times will work for you. I know not everybody's in Eastern time, so go ahead, sign up for the workshop. And if you can make the one on the 20th, I am super excited. If not, come to the one on the 27th. If these times don't work for you, when you opt in, reply to me. Let me know what times work for you. That will help me know what time to make the next workshop, because I realize not everybody lives in my time zone. Hope to see you there. Can't wait. Yeah, it definitely seems like you guys have some really good systems, and the fact that you alternate and divide and conquer helps with that. And that kind of leads me into my next question for you, which is the daily burnout for moms. So maybe these are some of the things you might suggest. And I know that you suggest implementing systems. Is this what you're talking about? Is it something else that helps moms reduce stress, increase communication with their kids and their partner, and have them more productive in their family unit?
Yeah. So I think, you know, every family is different, right? So like, I'm home and I'm really fortunate that I get to be home. But I also had this realization the other day. I'm like, there's people who leave the house and however their house looks in the morning is exactly how it looks like when they come home, because their kids are out of the house all day. But I think, you know, some of these systems that I put into place that I think are really important for other people to put in place in their home too, are it truly does all start with communication. And if you can't have good communication with your partner, most of the time, this is not going to work. And then you're going to become resentful. And then the burnout is going to become even harder. And it's just not going to click. So it all starts with really solid communication. And I realize over the years of how many couples don't have good communication. Me and my husband, our whole entire relationship, we've been together for 15 years. We have lived and worked together basically all of those 15 years. And we had to have good communication because we couldn't bring work home and we didn't want to bring home to work. So like, we just talk. And I think so many people get like, so many moms are like nervous to talk to their partner and be like, I need help. Like, I need this from you. But the quicker that you can do that in your relationship, the easier it's going to be when you have kids. Like, kids aren't going to solve your problems. Kids aren't going to all of a sudden make your communication with your partner increase if you didn't have a level of communication to start. But if you are nervous about talking to your partner, you can talk about it in a way that isn't, make sure you're not talking about it in a way that's like badgering them. Like, you get off home from work and all you do is sit on the couch. Like, well, how about you take a step back and you'd be like, hey, when you get home from work, like, the kids really want to spend time with you. Like, maybe let's try to do something as a family. And it's not like a you versus them type of situation. It's how can you work together to be the best parents? So starting with solid communication is really important. And like, in my mom coaching program, like, that's where we start. So like, we talk about what communication is like, because that is the foundation for getting these systems into the house. The other system that I think is extremely important to do in your house, because let's be real, like, you probably have two kids' toys all over. And by the end of the day, even if you are out of the home, when you get home and then you're cooking dinner, getting dinner on the table, the kids are playing, you know, it's, your house does need some sort of cleanup. I'm personally not someone who can just leave toys all around and like worrying about stepping through toys, but you can put a system into place in your house, and I call it PM pickup. And basically you spend 10 to 15 minutes. It doesn't have to be perfect. Like, there's no perfection in my life. Like, am I OCD and would I love perfection in my life? Absolutely. But I have four kids and I'm very realistic about that. So just taking 10 to 15 minutes as a family and including your toddler in it, like, hey, go put this toy here. And the more that you do it as they get older and they grow, the more they're like, you can just say, hey, can you go pick up all the trucks? And they know exactly what to do with the trucks. But you also include you and your partner together. So it's not like you get home and you're doing all this. Yeah, everybody just wants to chill on the couch at the end of a long day. Whether you're a stay-at-home mom or whether you're an out-of-the-house working mom, whether you're a stay-at-home dad or an out-of-the-house working dad, everybody just wants to chill at the end of the day. So if you can realize that you can spend 10 to 15 minutes every night saying that this is how we're going to put a system into place in our house, and not strive for perfection, just strive to get something done in that time, it's really powerful. And then my other biggest one is bedtime routine. Like, if you don't have a solid bedtime routine, guaranteed your toddler's fighting bedtime, guaranteed bedtime is taking forever, you're laying with them. So it's just really important, I think, to make sure that you do these little small shifts that make a really big difference in your house. And then you would also ask about mom burnout. And like, this is something that doesn't come overnight. And it's not like you can just be like, oh, I'm just going to go away for the weekend once a month and like magically feel better. That's where the communication comes in with your partner and asking for help in any way possible. And it doesn't necessarily have to be with the kids. It can be like, hey, I would really like to hire out our laundry and have it picked up and dropped off once a week. Or I would like a cleaning person to come to the house because that would take a lot of pressure off me. And I think that we talk about, when we talk about mom burnout, we're thinking that we need to do these really big things. And that's the same thing with the systems. We think we have to do these really big things, but in reality, it's small things like, hey, you're putting the kids to bed tonight. I'm going to go watch a show, or I'm going to go take a walk, or like, I'm going to go listen to a podcast, or I'm just going to get out of my own head. And starting with these small things is how you can then go take that girls' weekend or that solo trip that you want to take, or go away with your partner for the weekend. And it's just realizing that even these small things really then start to add up and you can build on them. So that's kind of like where I like to start, which I think is not how a lot of moms view it.
Yeah.
No, I don't think like a shower alone is, you know, self-care and your takeout time, but maybe that's what you have time for that day. And maybe that is what just shifts your mood. And that can be included in start up in this process of taking care of yourself. So yeah, that's like kind of like where I go into like the mom burnout aspect is you have to start small, because if you start big, you're going to fail. It's just like losing weight. You can't say, I'm going to reduce my calories 1,000 calories, but to like 1,500 calories a day, and I'm going to work out 7 days a week. You're going to fail. You have to start with one or the other, and you have to be like,
I totally agree. I totally agree. You do have to start small because, first of all, if you set a goal too big, then and then you don't succeed, you're like, I failed. And then that's why small goals are so much better, because you can succeed and have small wins right away. And I was going to say, I think it was really interesting how you mentioned that moms, especially burned out moms, think they need to do more or need to go out and do things, and not saying that that can't be done or that's not helpful, because I think it's, in cases it definitely is. But the idea of delegating more tasks is helping mom burn out, not necessarily going out and getting a manicure, like to fix all your stress and problems. Right. While those things are great and might really help some people, looking at really how can you make your life less stressful, like from the source of it, and not just, again, doing these things that might make you feel better in the short term, but then you go back to the same house. And the difference is now you just have your nails done, but you're still back in the same situation. So I love how you said that. And I also love how you said, you mentioned laundry. And so that's so funny, because that is one of my biggest pain points. So I'll share a little bit what I mean by that is, you know, like I have twin toddlers and I run a business. I help toddler moms with meltdowns and behaviors. And so my time is very limited. And so I work on my business in my free time, like all of my free time almost. And besides when I've taken care of my health, right? So I prioritize business, health, obviously all the time with my kids and family, and then laundry, and then laundry. So laundry everywhere. And I feel sometimes like that is a symbol. I had a conversation with a friend last week, and I was telling her, I was like, the laundry. And then we found out that the laundry was just like a symptom. It wasn't the source of my stress and things. It was just a reminder that I saw every time I saw it, I go, should I really be doing what I'm doing? Should I really be helping other people? Because I don't even have the laundry folded and put away. And it's been sitting there. And I'm just throwing it back in the washer, throwing it back on the chair. We're just like, and it's like, why? I shouldn't be doing what I'm doing unless I have it perfect. But I love how you said, like, delegating that or finding a system or a way. And I think for moms, these things we might not really be aware of, but they manifest or they show as a symptom. So if it's like the messy kitchen setting you over the edge, or if it's like having to meal plan or prep setting you over the edge, these are the symptoms of things, but it's not exactly that is the root problem.
Exactly. And I think, you know, a lot of times I see this as well, is that there's so many methods out there, right? So like, there's so many things that you can Google. You can be like, how do I keep my house clean? Like, what system do I have to put into place to keep my house clean? And like, I have gone down that rabbit hole more times than one, which made me realize that none of these things sometimes I think are created by moms. Because I'm like, what do you mean? I mean, the only thing that I will say is like, laundry is not a sore spot for me, but cleaning the house is. Like, I don't want to be spending my time cleaning the house. So we have outsourced that. And I am very grateful that we're able to outsource that. And I am also very conscious and aware that not everybody is able to outsource things that cost money. So that's where you have to really realize what is stressing you out and why is it stressing you out, like you just said. And if laundry is stressing you out, is it stressing you out because you try to do it every day, but you don't have a desire to do it any day? Like, would you rather spend 4 hours on a Sunday or Monday or whatever it is doing laundry and just getting it done? And the other thing that I will always add to that is we are always flexible and allowed to do what we want with our money. And yes, people live paycheck to paycheck, and that is totally valid. But I guarantee you there are things that you do that you don't even realize. Like, do you get takeout a couple times a week? And if you could take that money, and would you rather cook and outsource your laundry? Like there's trade-offs in life. And I think that just understanding what your major stressors are, and like you mentioned kitchen, like that's where PM pickup comes into play, where in our house, because we do it together, there are days that I'm the one cleaning up the kitchen and everybody else is cleaning up the rest of the house. And that's okay. Like, it's no big deal. I don't mind that. But I also am not someone who can leave dishes in the sink overnight. like, you know, we all have our things, but just figuring out how you can get help in some way. Maybe there's another mom, like, and maybe you're a stay-at-home mom, or, and maybe you run your own business, and maybe there's another mom in the neighborhood or in your town, and you can trade off childcare one day a week, where one day you have all their kids and one day they have all your kids, and you get a day to do stuff. And then you're not it's not costing you anything, but you're then able to get focused work done, whether it's work or laundry or house stuff, whatever it is, you're able to get that focused time. So there's lots of creative ways to go about it. It's just trying to find that root cause of why are you so frustrated? Is your partner not helping and you're so frustrated, but you don't even know how to start that conversation? Like, starting the conversation is probably the biggest challenge I see with a lot of moms that I work with, because they're afraid of what their partner is going to say. But you have to remember why you're in a relationship, and like, that you love each other and you wanted to start a family together. And like, just go back. Like, just because you have kids doesn't mean your relationship needs to end. Yeah, there's hard times and there's pauses and everything. But on the same token, if you still have that communication, like, the resentment doesn't build, and then you're able to start the conversation and you're able to have less mom burnout because, you know, you trust your partner with your kids, like their kids and whatnot. So I think it's like trying to find a solution to what the root cause is. And that's why in my mom coaching program, I work with that a lot, because we need to make it better. We need to make it easier for the mom. And like, that is always my goal, is to make it easier for mom.
Yeah, that's so amazing in what you said. And I think it's also really interesting, like, especially when we're talking about the communication piece with our partners, is allowing them to have the chance to grow too. It can be really sensationalized in the social media or on television of couples struggling with this very concept. Like, I've seen it kind of sensationalized, and like, where maybe dads, like, mom asked dad to help, like, because a lot of times I hear, well, if mom just asked dad to help, you know, then that would fix all the problems. But sometimes, you know, you get a response from your partner that you don't want to hear, like, I can't do that, or I'm not going to do it, or I'm doing something else. And you're like, well, I did ask for help, but I'm just not supported. And the relationship is terrible. And it goes right to this, like, 0 to 100. The relationship is awful. Like, I can't believe all this is happening. I think this does happen to moms, and because I see it all over the place, you know, default parent, and kind of what you're saying, like, coming home, just wanting to watch TV, not wanting to interact with the kids, or if they are, it's a very short amount of time. And like, personally, from my own experience, is, you know, there could be reasons behind why your partner, coming at it more of like curious and not blaming and judgmental, which is hard to do. And I totally get it. It's really hard, because I didn't come from that place until I started understanding my husband more. And I started because we went through a patch of difficulty, you know, where I was like, you know, can I take a shower? I want to go shower, when the boys were newborns. And he was like, no. And he was like, I don't want you to think I'm always going to watch the boys while you go shower, because I'm also working from home. And I was like, okay, I get that, but I never ask you. And we got into this big thing. And later I found out we were doing some kind of like independent couples therapy, where we were talking about like our childhood, and it kind of came up, and it kind of made sense to me that, you know, his dad was not that kind of, like, his role model of a dad didn't do things. He didn't help. He didn't help. So he had to grow. So, you know, we went from my partner who was struggling with, we had good communication, except for when we had kids, then our communication, right, all of a sudden it became terrible. And what happened was, yeah, it took a long time for that to recover, but there was a lot of growth. So now what our day looks like is, here's this dad that didn't want to do that. You know, if I ask to, if I'm like, I don't even ask him, or I'm like, I'm going to go shower, you're watching the boys. And that's what happens. Or, you know, he, like, while I clean up dinner, he goes, gets bath time ready. And while I'm finishing cleaning up bath time, like putting away the stuff, he is cleaning the dishes and the cups. Right. And so we get everything done really fast. And we also let go of perfectionism. Like, some days I'm like, you know, it's good enough, and we're done early, and then we can get our downtime. So it's like, But we didn't start that way. And it was a journey. It was a struggle. And it took a lot of understanding and I think it's just so sensationalized. Like, if your partner says something, they're terrible. And, you know, it's going to be terrible forever. It's not true.
Well, and I think like there's so much in that, you know, I think it starts with you, like we as moms feel like we have to ask permission to our partners to do something, but it takes two to tango. And, you know, like we became parents together, and like the first time you become a parent, most of the time, if you know, let's just say that's their first kid as well. Like you're becoming parents together. You're learning and growing together about it. And I think so many parents then become divided because they don't have these conversations and they're not like, hey, I'm going to go shower. Like now, like I say to my husband, I'm like, hey, I'm going out. Like, bye. Like, I don't even, you know, it's not like, hey, on Saturday, can I go get a manicure and pedicure? I'm like, hey, on Saturday, I'm going to do this at this time. And like, it kind of is planned just because our life is kind of chaotic with four kids anyway and activities and stuff. But you know, I think we get to this point where it's like, we need to even ask our partners for permission and we don't. Like, they are also a parent and it is trying to figure out what type of parent they are and what type of parent you are. But the sooner that you can have that conversation, which should most likely be during your pregnancy, which like, I think would be really valuable to a lot of people, but it's just not talked about because there are a lot of people who don't have these dad role models who are super involved. Like I had a super involved dad. Like, my parents also divorced, but my dad, even when my parents were together, I mean, he worked a job where he left at 5 o'clock in the morning, but he was the one that picked me up from school every single day. Like he was doing all these things with us. And, you know, I think it just kind of speaks volumes depending on what your role model was, but also just like understanding, like, what is parenthood? Like parenthood is caring for another life. And having them grow, and you grow in that process. And that's why I say, like, you become a different mom every single time you have a kid, because you are learning and growing along with them. And I agree, like, you know, we as moms feel like we have to do everything and we don't. And the sooner you can realize that, the easier it's going to be to start to give up some of that. And like I said, it doesn't even have to be with childcare. You don't have to find a babysitter so you can do stuff. You can say, hey, I'm going to do grocery pickup. I'm going to order my thing online, or I'm going to do grocery delivery. And that takes something off your plate. And I think there's so many ways that we can look about it that so many parents just say, oh, well, I don't have help with the kids. Well, you don't need to have help with the kids. What other areas can you get help in then that can de-stress your life?
Yeah, I love that. I love that because there's so many different things that can work for us, whether it is paid help or even if it's not, and it's just getting creative and finding another way to get support. Like you said, grocery pickup, you know, if going to the grocery store is like a nightmare with your kids and you're just exhausted, it's like, yeah, pickup or even delivery. Sometimes it can be like, you might think something might be more expensive, but if you actually look at it, sometimes it's not. Because what I found is when I went shopping at, you know, we have different grocery stores in our area, but one of ours is Harris Teeter, and which is very close to our house. And then there's other ones. And so I found ordering groceries from Amazon Fresh was actually cheaper than me going and shopping at Harris Teeter. Now, if I wanted to save more money, I could try to go to like Aldi's or something like that. But finding what works for you. And sometimes it is just worth it just to pay a little bit extra for a little bit more peace of mind if you can. And weigh it on a scale.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Like if going to the grocery store with your toddler is super stressful because they ask for everything and then you have to explain a million things and then they ultimately have a tantrum because they can't have something. And if you have to pay $10 to have it delivered, like, I don't know, to me that $10 is worth it because you're spending an hour, what should be 30 minutes of your time is now an hour to an hour and a half of your time because you're dealing with a toddler melting down. And a toddler asking for everything and you constantly saying no. And then you feeling like, well, I never say yes because we don't want to get the extra things and we don't need more candy and we don't need more this and we don't need more that. Like having it delivered to your door and then having your toddler help maybe put it away and have that be the excitement, being like, oh, look what we got, you know, and like getting creative with that, but just not in a store.
Yeah, exactly. Because some parents might think like, oh, if I don't do this, like I'm not doing what other parents are doing. And my kid is missing out. But there's, like you said, there's other ways to involve them, like putting away the groceries or grabbing the bags and recycling or There's so many different ways to incorporate our child and give them independent skills and experiences. Maybe you do take them to the grocery store, but maybe you don't do it every week. And maybe you do it when your partner's there. So there's two of you. And you do it like one weekend a month. They still get the grocery store experience, but the other days you're picking it up. So I love that. I love how you work with moms to customize what works best for them, because it's definitely not a cookie cutter experience for moms.
It's not. It's so not. And like, that's something that I have seen time and time again, especially like in my early years going down the rabbit hole of like, how can I keep my house clean? And, you know, I'm not going to mention any methods, but I'm just like, this is so unrealistic for me. I'm like, this is not working. I'm like, I cannot be doing this. And I think it's so important to really just understand what their life is like. You know, like me up and going is no big deal, but that's the type of person I am. And not everybody's like that. They're like, you want to know what? I'd rather pick up because I don't want to deal with people in the store, or I'd rather order everything online and do this. And like, I'd rather, you know, go to the library and have my kids spend some time there than go to a play place. And so I think it's really important to talk to moms individually, because we are all individual people, and figuring out what works best for them. Because, you know, not every bedtime routine is exactly the same with kids. You know, some kids have multiple stories, some kids say prayers, some kids have affirmations, some kids, you know, whatever it may be. And I think it's just so important to like really look at everybody as an individual, moms as an individual, and their household, because every household is different. Some dads work overnight, some are single moms, some, you know, dads work during the day, some dads travel. Like, it's so important to look at the big picture to then be able to say, okay, this is what we're going to do in your home. And this is how these small changes are going to actually be seismic shifts for you. And you're not going to like, you're going to come out on the other side and be like, man, I wish I just did this sooner.
I love that. And those small little things, because I think you said earlier, sometimes it's just those small shifts or the 1-3% of doing something or that small win that makes such the big difference. And over time, they really add up and build up, and we're going to feel it, and it's going to really help us with burnout. I really love that. So Dee, is there anything else that you would like to share with us that we haven't talked about?
I think we covered a lot. I think that there's a lot of information in this episode. I will say I hang out on Instagram most. I post all the time. I post in stories. My DMs are always open. Like, I have conversations with moms all the time. It's just, you know, a really good way to like know that you're not alone. Like, I always say I'm a real mom of four, you know, like this is what I look like every single day. Like, I'm not shy about the fact that I wear leggings and some sort of sweatshirt every single day. It's what I'm comfortable in, but I am constantly on the go. I have four kids. I'm moving, I'm doing things. And it took a while to figure out an exact system that works particularly for my house, but that's why I have so many systems that I work with moms, because what works in my house for bedtime might not work in house for your bedtime, but how can we make that and adapt that to bedtime? So I run free webinars every once in a while. So, you know, always be on the lookout on Instagram for that. Or if you're on my email list, that always goes out as well. But my Instagram handle is DEE_MamaChaosCoach. And that's where I hang. It's where I'm comfortable with. You know, I love chatting with people and just having those conversations, because I think everybody deserves help and everybody deserves support in any and everywhere in their life. And so I'm really passionate about that. And it brings me a lot of joy. Like you, it's a lot of work, you know, working from home and having kids who are home and whatnot. But, you know, it's something that I want to, if I make a difference in one mom's life every single week, like that makes me really happy.
That is so beautiful. I love that, Dee. Thank you for sharing all your inspiration, wisdom, systems, and your journey of your family with four kids. Such an inspiration. Thank you, Dee. And we will be sure to check you out. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much for having me today.
Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up another episode filled with tools and insights to help your parenting journey have clarity and ease. Remember, every child is unique, and so is our experience, especially when there's more than one. Keep celebrating those small victories and learning along the way. I'm Heather, your Twin Mama Guide, and until next time, here's to raising skilled, self-regulated toddlers who listen, learn, and love. Take care and see you soon.